Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you, Deborah.
Glad you're with me now.
I'm glad I'm with you, too.
Okay. Where's my music? Oh, my goodness. It's not going.
Yeah, well, we're going to get Peter B. any second now.
I don't know why it's not going.
I'm running the board next time, okay?
No, you're not. Why?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foti. A decision expected soon from Idaho Senator Larry Craig. CBS News learns Senator Craig will have an announcement regarding his future plans tomorrow in Boise, Idaho. Jonathan Martin with Politico.com.
When you have the lurid, explicit details from the bathroom incident at the airport in Minnesota, combined with rumors and allegations over decades, is likely going to push him to end his career tomorrow.
Well, after 29 years in the Senate, Virginia senior Senator John Warner has decided not to run again.
In his nearly 30 years in the Senate, John Warner, who's the ranking member of the Armed Services Committee, has become one of the most authoritative voices in Congress on the military. The former Navy secretary and Marine veteran urged others to devote time to public service.
I added up a total of 45 years in which I've been privileged to be a public servant.
Warner, who is 80, has earned respect from members of both parties. Virginia's junior senator, Democrat Jim Webb, put it simply.
John Warner is the quintessential Virginia gentleman.
The challenge for Republicans will be keeping Warner's seat in the party. John Hartsey, CBS News, Washington.
Also calling it quits in the next couple of weeks, White House Press Secretary Tony Snow.
I'm going to try to work up some book proposals, probably first and foremost on issues of how you deal with sickness.
Snow himself is dealing with a battle against cancer. This late word from Durham, North Carolina, new legal trouble for the former prosecutor in the Duke lacrosse case, which ended up being thrown out. Here's CBS's Jim Crisula.
A judge has decided that former prosecutor Mike Nifong lied to him about crucial DNA evidence in the Duke lacrosse rape case. Testifying in his own defense, Nifong said while he may have made misstatements, it was not intentional. The judge did not buy that. Nifong faces up to 30 days in jail and a $500 fine.
Ticket sales fast and furious for tonight's $330 million Mega Million lottery drawing. Lots of optimism.
Spend and spend and spend.
Pay off my bills, help my family, and donate some to charity.
I would help everybody because that's how I am. I'm serious. That's the kind of person I am.
Charity, I have a family. Spread it around.
The odds for those folks, 1 in 176 million. President Bush speaks out on the credit pinch.
If your family is one of those having trouble making the monthly payments, this problem doesn't seem modest at all.
And he announced several proposals to deal with an alarming rise in mortgage defaults. Lizanne Saunders is chief investment strategist with Charles Schwab and Company.
We still have the employment effect largely in front of us. We're starting to see it now, certainly with many of the mortgage companies shutting their doors. Some of the other bigger banks that have mortgage divisions shutting down those divisions, laying off people.
Wall Street apparently liked what it heard from the president. The results, markets up. Dow Jones Industrials up 119 points. Standard & Poor's 500 up 16 and a third. The NASDAQ up 31 points. This is CBS News.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on Hydro-Edge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
It's a case that does not involve terrorism, but two college students are charged with carrying explosives over state lines.
The pair were picked up for speeding August 4th in Berkeley County, South Carolina. Investigators say they immediately aroused suspicions for their evasiveness. Sheriff Wayne DeWitt says deputies saw live ammunition on the floor of their car, and later...
In the trunk of the car, the deputy observed what he thought to be
pipe bombs.
Although both men face explosives charges, a federal official tells CBS News this is not a terrorism case, and that word does not appear in the indictment. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Well, San Diego border crossing is pretty busy under most circumstances. Today there was a majorly traffic jam on the Mexican side because of a labor demonstration. Members of a teacher's union sat down in the northbound lanes just a few hundred yards south of the crossing point. They're against changes in Mexico's pension system. Gay Brewer has died. He was a big star on the pro golf tour in the 1960s. He was 75 years old. I'm Tom Foti, CBS News.
It's your walls and your ideas, your kitchen and your creativity, your garage and your vision. It's your home, from the small jobs that renew to more ambitious ideas that transform. At Ace Hardware, we're here to help you.
Come to your neighborhood Ace and start your project now for paint, plumbing, home organization, serious hardware, and great gadgets, plus a team of Ace folks to help you get just what you need to make your home beautiful.
Ace is your place, with everything for your home, plus expert advice and solutions that work for you. Ace, the helpful place.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. That's peace of mind. Now get 3.9% APR on select Ford or Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
We're going to spend this hour with journalist Robert Perry, the guy who helped break the Iran-Contra story in the 1980s, and he's been digging for dirt ever since. Robert Perry writes at ConsortiumNews.com, which is a nonprofit, and I invite you to support it if you have the means to do so, because he does a lot of great work, and from what I can tell, the budgets are not robust there at the ConsortiumNews.com news desk. Bob Perry, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again. And from the website, I see that you have a new book. Is Neck Deep out yet?
Yes, it's available on the internet. We haven't yet released it to or has not been released yet to the bookstores, but it is available both through the publisher's website at neckdeepbook.com and through amazon.com. And if people buy it through the publisher's website, then $5 for each purchase gets rebated to keep our website going.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, could I ask your people to send my people a copy of the book, because
sure.
Next time we have you on, we'll go in depth on that.
I'd love to.
Yeah. The full title is Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. And I want to catch up on a couple of recent posts of yours, Bob. And why don't I let you choose the order? There's one that went up just today about, it's called If Democrats Want to Lose. And the other that I think is really powerful is the one about Donald Rumsfeld's resignation. So I'll let
you... Sure. I think both of them are kind of interconnect somewhat. The piece on Donald Rumsfeld's resignation is, I think, an interesting tale about the perceptions of what happened around the election in November of 2006. It was generally believed at that time that when the Democrats won on November 7th, and the next day George W. Bush announced the ouster of his defense secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, and the appointment of Robert Gates, the former CIA director, that Bush was making a major concession to the Democrats and to Republicans, or the so-called realists, his father's group. Newsweek even had a cover showing a large George H.W. Bush in the foreground and George W. Bush kind of as a little kid. So that was the perception at the time. It turned out to be entirely false. The reality was, as we now know, that on November 6th, the day before the election, Donald Rumsfeld had submitted a memo which had called for de-escalating the war in Iraq. He simultaneously, or the same day anyway, we now know, submitted his letter of resignation. So, and even before that, the weekend before, November 6th would have been a Tuesday, the weekend before, George Bush had called Robert Gates to his ranch and basically laid out for him the possibility of becoming defense secretary and sounding out Gates if he would essentially buy into the neoconservative vision for the Middle East, which Bush at least felt Gates was amenable to. So what we had was really the story really was that Rumsfeld was going wobbly on the war, and Bush got rid of him and put in someone fresh who he thought could at least promote the continuation and even the escalation of the war. So while the Democrats and some of the realist Republicans were sitting around thinking that Bush was making major concessions, he was actually preparing to take them on frontally and not just nix this idea of de-escalating, but actually begin escalating, which he did with the surge. So the Democrats were sort of living with wishful thinking. And even when some of this has sort of come out, the Rumsfeld memo came out in December, and even before, it was before the Gates hearings, but the Democrats did not make an issue out of it.
Yeah.
They basically, I think, were still so happy that Rumsfeld had left that they just did not want to make a big deal of it. And then subsequently, you had it was only a week or so ago that the resignation letter was flushed out by Reuters and other news agencies, and it showed to people's surprise that instead of the November 8th resignation that people had thought, it was actually November 6th. So you have here a whole story, a whole narrative of how this developed, where the American people, and because if they listened to the mainstream press, would have had it completely wrong.
Yeah. Let's go into a couple of details here. First of all, you published in your article that people can find at consortiumnews.com a quote from the Rumsfeld memo of November 6. Clearly, what U.S. forces are currently doing in Iraq is not working well enough or fast enough, and he was seeking consideration of an accelerated drawdown of U.S. bases from 55 to 10 or 15 by April of this year and to 5 by July of this year. So if Rumsfeld's plan had been put into effect, we'd be much further along in the withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq than any of the Democratic plans that have been offered as part of the debate over the supplemental and the surge that occurred this spring.
Right. Rumsfeld was basically moving in line with Congressman Murtha, who had been recommending for some time this refocusing of the war effort, essentially having some Americans left behind as a strike force against Al-Qaeda or for important security missions, but essentially removing the American troops from a combat role. And that's where that was the direction that Rumsfeld was headed. It was not the direction that George Bush wanted to take, or presumably Dick Cheney. So Rumsfeld, rather than being one of the guys being tossed over the side because he was a war proponent, he was actually tossed over the side because he'd become a war skeptic.
That's remarkable. And the fact that the Democrats didn't really see the significance of this, as they were busy kissing up to Bob Gates and rolling over for his appointment, I never expected them to stop it, but I would love to have seen more aggressive questioning and more negative votes on his nomination, if only to lay out that marker that, you know, he didn't have the unqualified support of the Democratic caucus in the Senate.
Right. He was praised for his candor by Hillary Clinton and others on the Senate Armed Services Committee. So what the American people did not get was either a full accounting of how that resignation of Rumsfeld had occurred and what the appointment of Gates really meant, nor did the Democrats go into Gates' histories, which we tried to do in some of our pieces back at that time. We did a series of stories about the real Bob Gates, and I was even able to get some former CIA officers who knew him personally, knew him well, to write about their personal knowledge of how he ran the CIA and what his role was there. He was essentially a classic apple polisher who did what his superiors wanted. In the case of Bill Casey, who was sort of his mentor as he rose rapidly through the CIA in the 1980s, Casey wanted a super hardliner, so Gates took over the intelligence division, the side that does the analysis, and essentially began the process of politicizing the analytical division of CIA, which by the time you get to the end of the 80s is a very advanced problem, and it never gets corrected. And then under Tenet, who's a similar style guy who knows basically whose apple to polish, He furthered that in leading the country into the prelude to the Iraq invasion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we'll come back to Rumsfeld after the break, but let's stay with the CIA for a minute here and the Gates legacy there. We now have a report that was buried for over 2 years from the CIA Inspector General about the failures at the agency in dealing with the evidence and the tip-offs that they got prior to 9/11. And, of course, George Tenet, with his Medal of Freedom and his fat book deal money in the bank, is blustering that, you know, this isn't fair and it's not accurate. And even the report didn't really point fingers. It said there was no criminal behavior and there's no silver bullet that would have prevented it. But when you read between the lines, it's a pretty scathing indictment of the failures of the agency and our intelligence community at large in the 9/11 attacks.
Right. It's clear that not only did the CIA fail, but the FBI failed, at least at the higher levels in Washington, and the Bush administration failed. And to some degree, you could put some of the blame back on the Clinton people, too, although I think a lot of what Clinton's problem was when he came in 1993, he did not understand the need to really revitalize the CIA in the best sense of the word. That is, that he did not want to really go back in and appoint people who would have demanded honest analysis. Because part of the CIA, there are two parts of it, obviously. There's the operations side, which does the spying and the paramilitary stuff, which gets them often in trouble. But there's also the analytical side, which is supposed to be there providing honest information for the government so the government can make wise decisions. Clinton never seemed to care that much. He put James Woolsey in charge at the beginning, who turned out to be a failure as a CIA director. He never really put the focus on it that he should have. And eventually George Tenet becomes CIA director in the latter part of the Clinton years. And Tenet was just he was essentially a congressional staffer who always did what his superiors wanted. And his chief mentor was Senator David Boren, a very conservative or center-right Democrat, who also didn't want to ever get in much trouble. So he had this sort of go-along, get-along approach, and he took that into the Bush years. And he also had done a lot to make the Bushes happy. He had Tenet had renamed the CIA headquarters after George H.W. Bush, because Bush had been a former CIA director. But it was an extraordinary step to take at a time when Bush's son was trying to be president. And so you have this guy who was just constantly ingratiating himself, running the agency. And when Bush Jr. came in, and they were, and essentially his people were downplaying the al-Qaeda threat, focusing on other issues, that was when the various pieces were not put together. The agency failed, the FBI hierarchy failed, a lot of people failed.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. Visit his website at consortiumnews.com. Our lines are open if you'd like to talk with him. There's a caller. We'll get to you right after the break. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. You can also drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale, reminding you to listen in every Saturday for my show, 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays 4 to 5 p.m., honest talk about addictions and how recovery is possible. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. With addictions now the number one fastest rising disease in America, I mean all addictions, sex, food, gambling, alcohol, shopping, we are all affected. So listen in and call in. Saturdays 4 to 5 with me, Sheila Gale, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, prevention and recovery centers serving the Monterey Peninsula for over 30 years. Sheila.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 23 minutes after the hour. Lines open if you'd like to talk with me and our guest, Robert Perry. Our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And this morning, I got an email with a commentary piece written by a guy named Brent Badowski, and promptly called Brent, who's been on the show before, and invited him to come on the program. He'll be with us next hour for a few minutes to describe his piece called Many Democrats Wrong on Iraq Again. And then I went to consortiumnews.com to gear up for our conversation here with Robert Perry, and the number two item there is this piece by Brent Badowski. Great minds do think alike, even miles apart, Bob.
Well, I was talking to Brent earlier today, and he asked if I would post his piece, and it was a good piece. It was it meshes some with the piece that I did today also about if the Democrats want to lose, because it looks at how the Democrats are now approaching the Iraq war situation without the kind of clear-headed judgment. They're doing very much what they did back in 2002, and my piece looks also at how the Washington insider community is behaving very similarly to how it behaved in 2002, buying into some of the happy false hope that's being put out by the administration and by some in the military, and repeated by some of the same pundits who were all for the war in 2002. And so we're seeing kind of a replay, which is which the Democrats again seem to be buying into, at least in enough numbers to guarantee the war continuing.
Well, and And it's very interesting because one of the citations, I'm scrolling down here, I'm pretty sure it's in your article, is Congressman Jerry McNerney, a freshman from California. Yeah, here it is. You referenced it. Robert Scheer, who was on right before you today, Bob, he dinged McNerney for the same quote, and it's all over the blogosphere. So we've invited the congressman to come on our program later this week and explain himself. But he took a short trip, less than a week, in Iraq and came back and saying, you quote him, "We should sit down with Republicans, see what would be acceptable to them to end the war and present it to the president. Start negotiating from the beginning." Now, this just indicates that he appears to have been drinking from some very special Kool-Aid.
Well, you remember the line from former Michigan Governor George Romney when he was actually, it was interesting, I went back and looked at the history of this. Romney was turning against the Vietnam War in 1967 and described how in 1965 he had been taken on one of these dog and pony show trips through Vietnam arranged by the military and came back with his glowing view of it back in 65. And in 67, he explained that by saying he'd been brainwashed. And, of course, the brainwash quote was used very effectively against him and essentially destroyed his candidacy for the Republican nomination in, for 68. But what Romney was really saying was something that is true, that when you're taken on these kinds of trips, you're given a very selective body of information. Plus, there's just the camaraderie of these trips, the excitement, and you're sort of in this sort of fold, very much like what happened to the embedded reporters during the invasion phase. They bonded with the people they were with, and that's sort of an understandable human reaction. But it often leads to some very bad professional judgments.
Mm-hmm.
The situation in Iraq, while you can always find silver linings in a cloud, is not that much different than it was before. And if one just looks back over the past several years, there have been so many turning points. There have been so many oases, or that turned out to be mirages, where people will point and say, "Oh, this the capture of Saddam, that will turn this around." Killing of Zarqawi will turn this around. The passage of a constitution will turn this around. The election with the purple fingers will turn this around. And each time it turns out that the American public keeps stumbling deeper into this desert
and Bob,
and never
had,
finding the oasis.
You had a very interesting take on the comments from Carl Levin and John Warner. I did a rant about that yesterday because while I agree with the premise that the Maliki government is a failure, to have American officials suggest that the Iraqis should dump him in the middle of a term is quite remarkable. And as you point out in your piece, what Levin is doing is buying time for George W. Bush, because if they do replace Maliki, then we all have to sit back and give him a chance, the next person a chance.
Right. It's just, it's really painting the Democrats into a corner. And Levin has been one of the real problems for those who've wanted to get the U.S. out of Iraq. He is chairman of the Armed Services Committee in the Senate. And he did vote against giving the president war authorization in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
However, since then, he has taken positions that essentially raised the white flag.
Right. Robert, we'll take a break and return and pick up there. Robert Perry with me on the Peter B. Collins Show.
eyes are set going straight. Not a thing's going on. The man in the eye has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long. Oh, super cat.
From the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue our conversation this hour with journalist Robert Perry. He writes at consortiumnews.com. We overpronounce that a little bit to help you spell it. Consortium, you know that word. And he's got a new book on the way, Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. You can order it from Amazon, and if you do, $5 will go to support the work there at consortiumnews.com. And, Bob, I had to cut off your comments there because some of these breaks I can delay and some come on like a train wreck, and that was one of those.
That's all right.
But you were talking about Carl Levin, the senator from Michigan, chair of the Armed Services Committee. And as you pointed out, he did vote against the original authorization for the invasion of Iraq. But he has operated in ways that are so senatorial, so, you know, subtle and muted and often deferential to the other side. It's been very frustrating. And these recent comments about dumping the Maliki government, again, while they may have some merit based on the failures of this government, he's our puppet. We installed him. And now for the U.S. to further direct Iraq on how it should conduct its internal affairs, it even offended George W. Bush's sense of their autonomy.
Well, Bush also has made pretty clear, though, and I think some of his people around him, that they are ready for Maliki to be replaced, even though Bush did have some words of praise for Maliki today. But I think the key point would be if Maliki is removed, whether it's a Diem-style violent coup, as we saw in Vietnam in 63, or whether it's a more friendly approach, providing a nice, comfortable exile, maybe in the south of France, as we've done for other leaders who've outlived their usefulness. Either way, if there's a new leadership, Levin has sort of painted the Democrats into a corner of saying, well, we did what you wanted, and now you have to give us a year or so for this new government to work. So instead of moving the administration toward an exit, Levin actually has created an opportunity for them to at least get another 6 months, year, 2 years of a war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how the Democrats can, you know, they seemed a little promising earlier this year, when they took on the surge via the funding for the supplemental request. And I gave Pelosi and Reid some credit at the time for playing a weak hand as strongly as they could. But we do see how often their efforts to unify the Democrats are undercut by these somewhat independent moves by individuals. We cited Congressman McNerney a moment ago, and Levin, of course, carries a great deal more weight than a freshman like McNerney. But these present real problems for Reid and Pelosi in trying to come up with a unified Democratic position.
Well, the Democrats in the spring did start off, and when they attached a timetable to the appropriations bill, that gave them real clout, and they actually passed that. If you remember, it went to Bush and he vetoed it. But then, instead of facing Bush down and either offering him only short term renewals or demanding that he actually make some kind of real compromise, they announced, and Levin was one of those who announced, that if Bush didn't bend, the Democrats would crumble, and they would give him a blank check at the end of the day. And when you start off your negotiations telling someone, you know, if you don't bend, I'll do whatever you want, they're not likely to bend. So Bush stayed firm, demanded a blank check, and got one. Well, and that was one of the first things that truly offended, I think, much of the Democratic base.
And the Democrats got caught up in the language of the White House, which effectively propagandized around, quote-unquote, supporting the troops. And
right.
So the Democrats said, well, we will never cut off money to support the troops. And that was another serious mistake, A, to take the framing and language of the White House, and B, to make a pledge like that, because they ultimately will be forced, if they are serious about confronting the president and forcing him to withdraw from Iraq, they will have to take that step, the power of the
right,
purse,
right.
And cut off the funding.
The Democrats also have been disingenuous when they say they need 60 votes or to beat a Republican filibuster, or 67 votes to override a veto. What they really need is 41 votes if they want to be really tough. I mean, if Bush needs the money, if he needs an appropriation bill to pass, if he's going to refuse to sign one, the Democrats could arguably refuse to let one pass by filibustering. So you could have a standoff with those kinds of numbers. So the Democrats really don't need to affirmatively pass something that gives Bush another blank check.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants another blank check, he really has to get it from them, and they could block it.
Well, and
you hear this 60 vote number or 67 vote number thrown around, it's not really accurate.
And I think I've discussed this with you before, Bob. It's fundamental civics that appropriation bills originate in the House. And if the House offers $10 billion when the president asks for $100 billion, certainly negotiations can occur in the conference committee with the Senate, but you can't get $100 billion if the House starts with a $10 billion number.
And the Democrats, by having control of both houses, do control the calendar. The calendar is one of the most important things, and it was the one perhaps really significant achievement by gaining control of Congress last November. But instead of controlling the calendar, they've essentially let the Republicans dominate the calendar. We saw this again right before the August recess when Bush and the Republicans essentially boxed the Democrats into passing this sweeping eavesdropping bill.
That's the NSA amnesty bill, Bob.
Essentially, it was an amnesty bill. It provides it legalized what Bush had been doing illegally for 4 or 5 years. And it also is now offered future amnesty, immunity for communications service companies that turn over your records to the government.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't sue them even if you were improperly identified as someone whose records should be obtained.
Well, take a moment, because you're inside the Beltway there, and I was all the way out of the country on vacation and pretty fully unplugged when that bill passed. And I was stunned, Bob, that the Democrats even let it go to the floor. What happened there, and was there some kind of a deal?
Well, there was the framework for a deal. Basically, the argument that was raised by Congressman Boehner and others was that the FISA court had a few months ago objected for a very narrow reason to some of these warrantless wiretaps. And the point was that if say one terror suspect is talking to another terror suspect, both of them overseas. And if their communication is routed through a U.S. Communications company, is a warrant required? Now, obviously, that was not the intent of the law. That in those cases, warrants are not required. But a very easy fix, one sentence law could have been passed, which people wouldn't even notice, to take care of that. But instead, that became the basis for negotiations that went on, and then essentially the administration and the Republicans in Congress pulled a fast one on the Democrats. As the Democrats and Congress wanted to adjourn for August, the administration said, if you adjourn without giving us what we want, we will say you're soft on terror and are more interested in your vacation than the country's security. So at that point, the Democrats essentially capitulated and gave the president not only what he'd asked for, they gave him a much broader law that strips away many of the safeguards that even the administration had favored at one point.
Yeah.
And if you were outside the country, Peter, the only real phrasing in that law is that any person who is outside, who is believed to be outside the United States and who may possess information useful for U.S. foreign policy can be subjected to this one-year-long certification to collect your emails, your phone calls, and pretty much anything else they want. All it requires is for you to be outside the country. So it doesn't deal with terror suspects. It doesn't deal with people who are actually trying to harm the United States, even.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very broad, open-ended, blank check.
Well, I'm still very upset about this. Vexed is the word I would use. And it's hard to believe that the Democrats could be flim-flammed again. I mean, it happened with the Military Commissions Act. This administration has successfully intimidated the Democrats on so many occasions that, it's really frustrating to the point where it's hard to have much confidence in their ability to follow through on the key elements that most progressives thought our leaders got the message on from the last election. Let's take a phone call here. Ben from Salinas, thanks for holding. You're up on the air here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Robert Perry.
Yeah, Peter, maybe McNerney went over there and tripped over some of that missing money Bremer can't find, and maybe they should be looking in his freezers.
All right, we'll ask him.
But I have a question for you and your guests, which is burning in my heart. From August 6th until a few days after 9/11 in 2001, Mr. Cheney made 6 visits directly one-on-one to tenants' office. That is a matter of record. Now, since tenants' credibility is being brought to the bar, shouldn't the minutes, and you know they take minutes to protect themselves, shouldn't the minutes of those meetings and that agenda, that whatever they discussed, I remember at the time people were wondering, well, what's Cheney doing over there if Bush is supposed to be president? Now, we need to know that question, just like we need to know that guard that was on duty that morning of 9/11 when Cheney was at the consul and Norma Mineta walked in. There's a duty roster. That officer that said, does that office still hold, when the plane was at 10 miles of the Twin Towers, when he said, does the order still hold? We need to know, what was that order, who signed it, and who that officer was.
Good questions, Ben. Bob, your comment?
Well, I think the Bush administration has obviously been one of the most secretive in history. And one thing that has always struck me, since I've also dealt with the Reagan-Bush years, one of the first acts that George W. Bush undertook when he entered the White House on January 20th, 2001, was to sign an executive order which effectively sealed off records that were supposed to be released, records for going back to 1981 in the beginning of the Reagan-Bush years. So, and then later on, after 9/11, Bush Jr. extended that to make it a permanent ban, effectively, on those documents ever being released unless without the approval of not only the principals, not only Vice President George H.W. Bush, President George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush, but their heirs after they're dead. Jenna and Barbara Bush will have control, apparently, of all these records. So the American people have been essentially sealed off from much of our history.
Yeah. And it's interesting because in the last week or so, Hillary Clinton has been dinged by Republican echo chambers for being slow to release some of her White House files related to the health care bills and other issues that she took on. And while it, you know, clearly for political reasons, she's going to slow that down and keep it from happening until after 08, to hear the conservatives, the Republicans, attack her for that is just priceless.
Well, using all the divide and conquer methods that they're using with Obama and Hillary and Edwards and all that shenanigans going off, the 2008 election is not a done deal by far, and we could still wind up with Jeb Bush, and God help us if we do. Thank you, Peter.
All right, Ben. Appreciate the call today. And Bob Perry, you had an interesting item in this article about the Democrats regarding Air America and the failure of the Democrats and progressives to fund progressive independent media. And I know that, I certainly identify with what you said. And also I know that you and many others, Carolyn Kay, who writes the Make Them Accountable website, Rob over at opednews.com, many people who do a great job and who pour themselves into getting good information and analysis out to people around the country, are doing it on a shoestring budget. And, in the last election cycle, Soros and others pumped millions of dollars, $65 million went into Air America alone. And now that money is not available. And, I can't find anybody who's out there saying, gosh, I want to make sure that progressive media outlets survive.
Well, basically, after the election in 2006, the progressive community, to a great extent, seemed to lose interest in media. it's not something that I would say historically the progressives have wanted to support. It's there's been more of an interest in areas like organizing or in doing actual direct kinds of programs like helping the poor or buying up endangered wetlands and that sort of thing. But that's essentially allowed the right to invest heavily in these areas without being challenged. And I come at it from a mainstream journalistic point of view. I was in AP and Newsweek, and I saw firsthand the way that growing media in the 80s and the attack groups that were set up to go after individual reporters, the effect that had in intimidating mainstream journalists from doing their jobs. People were facing loss of their livelihood if they reported accurately and honestly on things that the Reagan-Bush crowd did not want reported on. You know, the neoconservatives really rose up during that period, and part of their genius, if you will, was the idea of controlling information flows. And they felt if they could, they called it perception management, if they could control how Americans perceived events abroad, usually by using fear tactics and other things, they felt they could manipulate the American people into supporting policies. And it turned out they were right. But one of the reasons they were right is that because there was no real pushback on media from the more progressive side.
We got to take a break. We'll return with Robert Perry. ConsortiumNews.com is his website. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests, and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future, and we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour as we continue our conversation with Robert Parry, P-A-R-R-Y. He's at ConsortiumNews.com.
And I made a little mistake earlier when I was referencing his new book called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. You should go to the publisher's website at neckdeepbook.com, because that's where the $5 bonus goes to consortiumnews.com. So go ahead and check that out. And if you go to the website, all that information is right there with hot links to make it easy for you. Bob, I wanted to ask you next about a news story that we just saw and my able assistant producer Brian Urban brought to my attention. Ed Markey, who's a liberal congressman from Massachusetts and chairs the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee, has written a letter to Michael Chertoff, the Homeland Security Secretary, demanding some answers about a new spying initiative. And it appears that when it's boiled down, that the plan is to use military satellites to spy on American citizens. And this seems to violate posse comitatus, which prohibits the military from operating inside our own borders. Have you seen much about this, and can you tell us anything more?
Sure. There was a front page piece in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago describing this. And it fits into this overall package of transforming America into kind of a Big Brother-style police state. We have now, basically it means that the government will be able to not just listen to phone calls and intercept emails, but literally watch what people do.
Mm-hmm.
The rationale is always put forward as this would, in case there were some terrorists who were at a safe house, the satellites could spy on them. But as we know, the temptation to government, especially when government officials are under pressure, to spy on people in the past, like Martin Luther King or other people who were part of the civil rights movement or part of the anti-war movement back in the 60s, was pretty powerful. But in those days, there was a very limited capability technologically for the government to do it. It had to resort to rather crude means, like in the Watergate case of breaking into the Democratic headquarters in 1972 to plant bugs on the phone. Now that would not really be necessary. And the temptation is going to be there for an administration like this one to abuse these extraordinary technological powers that are being given to them.
Well, it's very interesting. We'll watch that carefully. Also, Brian was reviewing some footage from the three-party Canada-Mexico-U.S. summit in Quebec, and there's some very unusual situations showing up on the video where some of the quote-unquote protesters who challenged the police appear to be wearing the exact same boots with the exact same little insignia on the bottom of the sole. That bears some further investigation. Steve in Salinas, you're next. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just a quick comment on Carl Levin. I think his comments were misdirected. When he's talking about a failing government, he should be looking at Washington, D.C.
Oh. Yeah, you think we need a midterm replacement?
Yes, and if Maliki should be replaced, then why can Bush stay there?
Well, that's a very interesting point, and it was fascinating because at the Quebec summit, when Bush was asked about this, he clearly, indicated that he doesn't have unfettered support for Maliki. They tried to fix that in his remarks today before the military veterans, but it was interesting the daylight that he permitted there, and then one of his statements was that it's up to the Iraqi people to decide whether to keep him or not. And I thought he had like a 4-year term.
Well, it's also rather disingenuous to say it's really up to the Iraqi people. It's not like they have the means to decide how this is going to go. It's going to be something that is pulled together either by some people in the government itself or the military or under the orders of the United States. That's the real world. It's not going to be that the Iraqi people are going to rise up somehow. They're already, in a sense, rising up in many ways, but not to sort of get someone like Chalabi or Alawi to replace Maliki. That's not where that's not how it works in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just in wrapping up, we got about a minute remaining, Bob. What else would you like to mention that you think is critical that maybe doesn't make it into the mainstream media that our listeners would like to know?
Well, I think, there has to be a very serious examination of the kind of concessions that the Congress continues to make in terms of Bush's demands for more and more power in the war on terror. As late as it's gotten, you know, we're now in August of 2007, the ability of this administration and its allies in the right-wing news media to intimidate members of Congress and members of the mainstream press to get them to go along with these intrusions on the Constitution. And these are not just privacy rights we're talking about. They're really constitutional rights. And the odd thing about George Bush's many statements about liberty and freedom is that the approach he's taken is to infringe upon many of the basic definitions that we have for liberty and freedom, which include each citizen, each person in the world having certain inalienable rights. And what we've seen consistently now over the past 5 or 6 years is the erosion of those rights.
Well, and the police state you referred to is certainly taking shape right here under our very noses, and most people are more interested in watching some junk on television. Robert, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your work, and I want people who have the means to contribute to help keep your work underway at consortiumnews.com.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Robert Perry. We'll talk again soon. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is our assistant producer, taking your calls. And you can visit our website to get podcasts and archive programs at peterbcollins.com.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, you can strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show, only on KRXA 540.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
President steps up with a plan to keep the wolf from your door.
My administration will launch a new foreclosure avoidance initiative to help struggling homeowners find a way to refinance.
A senior Republican senator says he won't be back.
My work and service to Virginia as a senator will conclude.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jim Taylor. We call it a mortgage meltdown. What it means in human terms, the specter of foreclosure, losing the home you think you own. Today, the president takes action.
It's the administration's first effort to confront an expected increase in mortgage defaults caused by the subprime mortgage crisis. The president described a modest impact on the overall economy while sympathizing with people caught in the credit crunch.
If your family is one of those having trouble making the monthly payments, this problem doesn't seem modest at all.
The president plans regulatory changes, stepped up enforcement of predatory lending laws, and a call for legislation all aimed at helping financially strapped mortgage holders. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
Now this.
It's your walls and your ideas, your kitchen and your creativity, your garage and your vision. It's your home, from the small jobs that renew to more ambitious ideas that transform. At Ace Hardware, we're here to help you.
Come to your neighborhood Ace and start your project now for paint, plumbing, home organization, serious hardware, and great gadgets. Plus, a team of Ace folks to help you get just what you need to make your home beautiful.
Ace is your place with everything for your home, plus expert advice and solutions that work for you. Ace, the helpful place.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long, and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
A prominent Republican is leaving.
80-year-old Virginia Republican John Warner says he'll leave the Senate when his fifth term ends.
On the 6th of January, 2009.
Maybe he saw the handwriting on the wall for his Republican Party, according to political analyst Stuart Rothenberg.
There's not much prospect of them getting back in a majority in 2008.
Whatever the reason, members of both parties say they'll feel the loss of Warner,
who embodies bipartisanship, who truly wants to solve the problems of this country.
Virginia Junior Senator Democrat Jim Webb calls Warner the quintessential Virginia gentleman. John Hartsey, CBS News, Washington.
Another Republican senator, Larry Craig of Idaho, scheduled to make an announcement tomorrow. AP says he'll resign in the wake of a men's room arrest.
When you have the lurid, explicit details from the bathroom incident at the airport in Minnesota, combined with rumors and allegations over decades, is likely going to push him to end his career tomorrow.
Jonathan Martin, Politico.com. Speaking anonymously, state GOP officials say that Craig will announce tomorrow morning he's resigning from his U.S. Senate seat effective the end of September. The president reacting to the resignation of his press secretary today.
I accept. I love you. And I wish you all the best.
CBS's Mark Knoller there today.
Though he says he loves his job at the White House, Tony Snow explains he has to leave government service in order to better provide for his family.
A lot of people at home are saying, well, what do you mean? You make all this money. Well, you know what? I made more money when I was in my previous career.
By that, he means his years as an anchor at Fox News and as a conservative talk show host on the radio. He says his battle with cancer was not a factor in his decision. Mark Knoller, CBS News, The White House.
Indictments today for a pair of Egyptian college students from Florida.
The men were arrested for speeding almost 4 weeks ago in Berkeley County, South Carolina. Sheriff Wayne DeWitt says they were acting suspiciously.
A passenger in the vehicle was noticed to have been using a laptop computer, and whenever the officer approached the car, he immediately shut the computer and threw it on the back seat.
He says a deputy found ammunition and pipe bombs in the car. Now the men are accused of illegally transporting explosives. One is charged with teaching the other how to use them for a violent crime. The pair of students at the University of South Florida could be brought back to Florida next week. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Prosecutor telling CBS News it's not a case of terrorism. Still time to take a chance. Mega Millions jackpot worth $330 million, something just under $200 million if you take it all in cash right now. Disgraced former Durham County District Attorney Mike Nifong willfully made false statements to a judge when pursuing rape charges against three falsely accused Duke lacrosse players. That's today's ruling by the North Carolina judge who is sentencing Nifong to 24 hours behind bars. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long, and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on Hydro-Edge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. Those who write laws, they can't recite them. Just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies.
It's time.
Time to go home.
It's time to go home. Senator Warner's figured it out. When is Dick Cheney going to get the message? This hour on the Peter B. Collins Show, we're joined by Scott Ritter, a great American who served our country in the Marine Corps and then served the world as a UN weapons inspector in Iraq prior to our invasion and occupation. During Desert Storm, he was a ballistic missile advisor to General Norman Schwarzkopf, and he joins us on the program today. Scott, thanks for calling. Thanks for checking in with us today. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
And before we get going, I want to mention that our friend Mark Crispin Miller at New York University flashed out an email today, and Scott Ritter is speaking this coming Tuesday, August 28th. And for all of our listeners in New York, why don't you go out and welcome him at the McNally Robinson Bookstore. That's at 52 Prince Street, 7 p.m. on Tuesday, August 28th. And he'll be talking in part about his latest book called Waging Peace, The Art of War for the Anti-War Movement. And that's Scott Ritter in New York on Tuesday, the 28th. Scott, I was triggered to give you a call and invite you on the program by a powerful piece that you posted at the Truth Dig website just a couple of days ago. And in it, you reflect on the departure of Karl Rove, Turd Blossom, from the White House. But you go on to indict the Vice President, Dick Cheney. And let me read a couple of sentences here. The vice president is the single greatest threat to American and international security in the world today. Not Osama bin Laden, not the ghost of Saddam Hussein, not Ahmadinejad or Kim Jong-il, not Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or Jose Padilla. Not even George W. Bush can lay claim to this title. It's Dick Cheney's alone. Operating in a never-never land of constitutional ambiguity which exists between the office of the president and the Congress of the United States, Cheney's office has made its impact felt on the policies of the U.S., as had no vice president's office before him. Granted unprecedented oversight over national security and foreign policy by executive order in early 2001, many months prior to the terror attacks, Cheney has single-handedly steered America away from being a nation among nations, albeit superior, operating roughly in accordance with the rule of law, and toward its present manifestation as the new Rome, a decadent imperial power bent on global domination, whatever the cost. Now, that's a very powerful statement, and I can't find anything wrong with it.
Well, it's factually based. I mean, it's a lengthy statement, but it's one that every word was carefully considered before writing it because, you know, as you're well aware, when you commit to writing something that gets into the public domain, you're going to have, you know, everybody and their brother taking a shot at it. And I wanted to make sure that if you're going to, you know, go after the vice president with strong language, that, you know, the facts back up the rhetoric. In this case, everything I mentioned is backed up by the facts. There's no doubt that When you talk about the United States of America, you know, people say, "Well, how dare you say the vice president?
is a greater threat to the United States than Osama bin Laden, the mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks that killed over 3,000 people. Well, you know, Osama bin Laden attacked three structures. He tried to attack a fourth structure, the White House, physical locations, and he killed people. I mean, there's no doubting this. It happened. But that's not what defines America. America is not defined by the World Trade Center. It's not defined by the Pentagon. It's not defined by even the White House or the Capitol, if that fourth aircraft had made it to its its target. It's defined by who we say we are, and that's spelled out in the Constitution of the United States of America, a document that says clearly who we are, what we believe in. You know, when you join the military, you take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. You don't say, I'm going to defend the Pentagon, I'm going to defend the World Trade Center. I'm going to defend a Constitution, a piece of paper, a document that says this is who we are and what we are. Osama bin Laden does not threaten the Constitution. He may threaten our physical safety. But that which defines America is under attack in the person of Dick Cheney, the Vice President of the United States, who has skillfully negotiated this new terrain, so to speak. Again, I call it the never-never land that, you know, goes between the executive office, which, again, is spelled out. The powers of the executive is spelled out in Article 2 of the Constitution, you know, and the legislative branch, Article 1. The vice president, of course, is the head of the Senate. He's also part of the executive. He lives in this never-never land, and Dick Cheney has taken that terrain to be his own. He says, I am above the law. I am above the Constitution. He's pretty much said that verbatim, that standard practices of accountability, checks and balances, do not apply to him. He claims to be neither part of the executive nor part of the legislative branch. He's in between.
Well, and they use the argument that because we are at war, the commander-in-chief, and by stipulation and executive order, as you pointed out, he has empowered Dick Cheney beyond any vice president, to my knowledge, in our history. And the repercussions, I think, are significant. And I don't think you've overstated the case here, Scott Ritter, because while the impact of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda is something that we will feel perhaps for a decade or two, it could go longer than that. I don't want to be silly about it. But the impact of the changes that have been driven by Dick Cheney, which roll back the rights of American citizens, which subject us to internal domestic spying and eavesdropping, the Military Commissions Act, which could be used to declare a U.S. citizen as an unlawful enemy combatant, and they could wind up at Gitmo being treated like Padilla was in the Navy brig in Charleston, or like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who we at least know was waterboarded, if not subjected to other torture techniques. Cheney has been responsible for this, and as the architect of the war and occupation in Iraq, that's a legacy that I think we will live with perhaps for a century or longer.
Well, absolutely. And remember, the war in Iraq and these other things that Dick Cheney has been involved in are, you know, symptomatic of a larger problem. And the larger problem, of course, is that the Dick Cheneys of the world and those neoconservatives who support him view the Constitution, again, the foundation of what defines America, who we are, what we are, they don't view it as, you know, a foundational document. They view it as a contractual document, which means that a contract that was, you know, arranged in the late 18th century is no longer valid today because new circumstances have arisen. And so it can be renegotiated over time. This isn't, again, me making this up. If you go in and read the writings and the thinking and the philosophy of the people that are associated and affiliated with Dick Cheney, this is exactly what they are saying. They're saying that, you know, we are above the Constitution. The Constitution cannot be an impediment to progress. Another thing they say is the Constitution does not in itself constitute a suicide pact.
I'm not someone who believes in suicide, but I will tell you this. As a former Marine who spent 12 years of my life serving my country, who's gone to war and took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, it may not be a suicide pact, but you know what? I was willing to die for the Constitution, and millions of Americans have died for the Constitution. That's how serious we need to take the rule of law set forth by the Constitution. This is not something that can be swept aside by an individual like Dick Cheney. This is a life and death issue, and Americans have to start treating it as such. We get all bent out of shape when Osama bin Laden and his cohorts hijack four aircraft and fly them into planes and fly them into buildings and kill thousands of people, but we remain mute when the vice president and his office run, you know, just roughshod over the Constitution, a frontal assault against that which defines who we are and what we are as Americans. If you call yourself an American, and I'm not talking about, you know, your NASCAR people and your wrestling, they say USA, USA all the way. No, a real American, somebody who's actually read the Constitution and knows what it means to be an American citizen, somebody who has invested themselves into the very fabric of our society. If you are such a citizen, you have to not only be disgusted by what Dick Cheney has done, but you have to be afraid, because this truly is the end of America. Once you allow the Constitution to be voided, we don't stand for anything as a nation. We become nothing more than a modern incarnation of a Roman Empire that is, you know, totally self-absorbed, above the law, and doomed to fail. I don't want America to fail. I want America to succeed. I have twin 14-year-old daughters who, you know, I want to grow up and be proud to be American, to live in this great country. And yet the future that they face is a dark future because of the Dick Cheneys and because of Dick Cheney himself. This man has done more harm to our nation than anybody before him.
And what's
Americans
even more
need to recognize
this. What's even more insulting is that he claims that he's done it to protect us. He's the strict father who has infantilized Americans and left us, hopefully, you know, from his perspective, looking up to him and saying, oh, thank you for taking away our civil liberties. We really appreciate that, Dick. We got to take a break. We'll return with Scott Ritter. He's with us this entire hour. So if you have a question or comment, call us now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Hey everybody, happy Friday, and boy, we got a little bit of traffic, and just let's start off in Hollister, eastbound 152 at 156. A big rig and another vehicle on the right shoulder. Eastbound 152, by the way, is very slow out of Gilroy at this point. Also want to mention Salinas, northbound 101 at Baranda, a stall on the off-ramp there. If you're traveling to Monterey, Highway 68 at York Road, a two-vehicle crash. This is a dump truck on the right shoulder. And let's see, Santa Cruz Mountains, Highway 17 at Redwood Estates. A vehicle ran out of gas on the right-hand shoulder. San Martin, northbound 101 at San Martin Avenue. There's a sheet of plywood in the third lane from the left. This report brought to you by Crystal Geyser, natural orange flavor, sparkling mineral water, very low in sodium, no calories. Crystal Geyser, the only water that you need. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 23 minutes after the hour. My guest is Scott Ritter. Served 12 years as an intelligence officer in the U.S. Marine Corps and served, I think, with distinction with UNSCOM, the U.N. group that was searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq before Bush forced them to leave the country before the work was finished so that we could begin bombing and launch our invasion in March of 2003. And Scott Ritter, I will always be grateful to you for your public statements prior to the launch of that invasion. In a conversation we had back at that time, you persuaded me that my suspicions were correct, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and that if, in fact, the stockpiles that we attributed to Saddam from the early 1990s were still hidden somewhere in Iraq or even secreted somewhere outside the country, that their shelf life had expired at that point. And I recall you saying that they were about as dangerous as a rancid bottle of Coca-Cola.
that's true. I look, science does matter. Facts do matter. I understand how perceptions are created. Look, as a weapons inspector in Iraq, I was guilty of, you know, formulating perceptions about the Iraqis, about the Iraqi government, based upon information others had provided to me as opposed to information I had collected myself. And I was inclined to accept at face value almost anything negative said about the regime until I actually did the research myself, went out and gathered the facts, talked with people, and could have firsthand experiences. And from that was able to derive what I feel history has shown to be an accurate assessment of, you know, what was going on with Iraq, with WMDs, et cetera. Tragically, though, I was unable to translate, you know, that which enabled me to create this perception of my own to the mainstream in America. And we see this repeating itself today. The president of the United States, George W. Bush, is, you know, encouraging the United States government to target Iran. First, from the standpoint of Iran's alleged status as a nation seeking nuclear weapons. The second is Iran's alleged status as a nation sponsoring terrorism. And most Americans have been pre-programmed to accept at face value almost anything negative about Iran. And we find the Americans buying into the concepts of Iran as a nation pursuing nuclear weapons or Iran as a nation sponsoring terrorism. Now, lately, you've seen the administration back off the nuclear claims, because science does matter. The facts do matter, and there are inspectors going to Iran, inspecting these facilities. They belong to the International Atomic Energy Agency, and they have come back repeatedly with reports that say the rhetoric of the Bush administration is not backed up by the facts on the ground. So the Bush administration has scaled back its talk about the imminent threat of an Iranian nuclear weapon. They don't need to continue to push that button, however, because that concept is registered in the back of the minds of most Americans. Now what the Bush administration is talking about is Iran's status as a state sponsor of terror. And they bring up the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Command, the IRGC. We are now going to list them as a state sponsor of terror subject to sanctions. This is facilitating the path towards warfare between the United States and Iran. Most Americans don't realize what's happening, that we once again are being conditioned to accept a war without question.
And Scott, trust referencing
if Iraq is a disaster, Iran's going to be 10 times worse.
And referencing your Truthdig article again, truthdig.com, why Cheney really is that bad. He's the one who's driving this whole hysteria about Iran.
Absolutely. Cheney is the office of the vice president has been referred to repeatedly by both the State Department and the office of the Department of Defense as being responsible for pushing conflict with Iran. And it's based on nothing more than the ideological preconceptions that the vice president has. It's not based on fact. At no time, at no way, can anything the vice president has said about Iran be backed up by facts. It's all speculation. It's all rhetoric. You have CIA officials. There's a recent article by Bobby Baer, a former CIA official, who talks about a colleague who is a explosive ordnance disposal expert with the CIA, who says there can be no doubt that these explosively formed projectiles, EFPs, that are used to kill tanks, come from Iran. Why? Because of the annealing system used on the tubes.
We'll talk about more. We'll talk more about that in a minute with Scott Ritter here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With just 2 weeks left in California's legislative session, leaders in both houses are working on a health care reform bill that would require employers to provide health insurance. The California Labor Federation's Art Pulaski.
Employers would pay 7.5% of payroll up to the maximum of Social Security taxable income, which is, about $96,000. And then employers would either have to provide coverage for their employees or put that money, equivalent amount of money, into a pot, whereby the state would have a large risk pool available for people who are not provided insurance directly by their employers.
Pulaski says a single-payer universal health care bill did not advance in the California legislature, but there's a real chance that this one will.
The discussions are becoming intense between the leadership and the governor in terms of how we negotiate this bill out. And so I expect that we're going to see some more significant progress over the next week.
New York City's sea of yellow cabs could come to a halt next week. Jesse Russell reports.
The 48-hour strike will happen on September 5th and 6th if the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission move forward with plans to install GPS tracking technology in all taxis. More than 10,000 cabbies make up the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, who announced the plans to move forward with the strike on August 23rd. During that press conference, Alliance spokesperson Bill Lindauer said taxi drivers are upset they have to pay for the GPS, which will track their every movement. As independent contractors, the taxi drivers consider it a violation of their privacy.
200 employees for Australian auto parts maker Venture returned to work on Wednesday, giving relief to Ford Motor Company, who had to stand down 1,800 workers without pay as that strike continued. Venture is moving the jobs from Melbourne and, according to union representatives, has reneged on an agreement to pay more than $25 million in entitlements. The employees returned to work after they lost legal protections. Ford had been asking the Australian government to become involved in the Venture dispute, so Ford workers could return to the production lines. Venture has been given 1 week to settle the dispute. In a major blow to former Senator John Edwards, the International Association of Machinists endorsed Senator Hillary Clinton for president on Thursday. Edwards had expected to pick up a labor endorsement from the 700,000-strong industrial trade union. According to IAM President Tom Buffenbarger, the union chose Clinton because she is the only candidate of either party, he says, to come forward with a comprehensive manufacturing policy. The machinists also endorsed Republican candidate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're spending this hour with Scott Ritter, former Marine Intelligence Officer, former U.N. Weapons Inspector, and a great American. And we're taking your calls toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Your calls are subject to monitoring, not for quality control, but for key words. Scott Ritter's recent book is Waging Peace, The Art of War for the Anti-War Movement. And the article that we're talking about, a commentary that he wrote at truthdig.com, is available still today right there on the homepage called Why Cheney Really Is That Bad. And before the break that I couldn't stop there, Scott, you were starting to talk about the drumbeat for military action against Iran that is echoing from the vice president's office. And one of the issues that they've been raising are these EFPs, these projectile bombs that we claim are being made in Iran. Now, I don't doubt that some of these munitions are coming from Iran, and you know much more about the world weapons trade than I do. But isn't it fair to say that just as Kalashnikovs are coming from Russia, and we don't consider Russia to be our enemy in Iraq, that as a regional arms merchant or arms source, that Iran sells these weapons to a lot of different governments and fighters in that part of the world. Is that correct?
Well, there's a couple. First of all, of course, it's correct that Iran has relations with a lot nations and organizations in that region, just like the United States has relations with nations and organizations, you know, in our hemisphere. Iran is positioning itself to be a regional power. It feels it has a right to be, given its size, its geographic location, natural resources, etc. But I don't think we need to then jump to a conclusion that says Iran is providing explosively formed projectiles to Iraqi insurgents for the sole purpose of killing American service members, which is, of course, the conclusion that the Bush administration has reached. You know, in the 1980s, I went to a course at the Special Warfare Center in the JFK Special Warfare Center in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, U.S. Army course. One of the things that we learned how to build were these improvised tank killers. We used tubes, steel tubes. We packed them with high explosive, and we put a concave charge, a metal shield at the front, and the explosive would basically turn this metal shield into a slug that would punch through armor.
Mm-hmm.
It was the cheapest tank killer we could come up with. It was designed so that we could teach stay-behind civilian forces, guerrillas, how to kill Russian tanks. There's no high technology involved in this. It's simple, you know, knowledge of explosives and how to use the force behind explosives to your benefit. This is all an explosively formed projectile is.
And they claimed
this
at one point
to say that this is high technology that only the Iranians can provide. It's absurd.
And Scott, at one point they claimed that these were coming exclusively from Iran, and then a week later it was shown that these are being manufactured inside Iraq.
Well, exclusively from Iran for Shia militias, and then we raid a warehouse and find out that Sunni insurgents are building them themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that didn't get play in the media, nor was it referenced by the White House to contradict their earlier statements.
We've also learned that the fighters in Iraq with these improvised explosive devices are using cell phones and little gizmos, infrared gizmos that you can buy at Radio Shack, to trigger those bombs. And yet we do not declare that the makers, you know, that Radio Shack is our arch enemy and that we need to go bomb the Tandy Corporation in Dallas.
Yeah, Radio Shack, of course, is a supplier of technology to terrorists and must be held accountable if you're going to bring... Let's talk about some facts here. One fact, the United States invited Iran and its proxy, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, and their military wing, the Badr Brigade, to participate in the campaign to overthrow Saddam Hussein in 2002-2003. When we invaded, we allowed the Badr Brigade to cross over from Iran into Iraq to confront Saddam Hussein's regime. We knew that the Badr Brigade was an adjunct of the Revolutionary Guard Command, an Iranian-controlled organization.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that they received arms and equipment and were funded by the Iranian government, and yet we brought them into this coalition. Today we have a prime minister in Iraq, Maliki, who is affiliated with the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, who is basically an Iranian-controlled proxy. Why are we surprised that the Iranian government has continued involvement? We facilitated the rise to power of Iranian proxies who today dominate the Iraqi government. It's absurd in the extreme suddenly for us to say, oh, Iran, you can't play. We needed Iran to play early on. We facilitated the rise to power of Iranian proxies. And now, because we're getting our butts kicked by non-Iranian-backed entities, in order to fulfill the vice president's, you know, grand strategic plan for regional domination in the Middle East, we are inventing Iranian involvement, frankly speaking, where it does not exist. Why cannot we be honest and say that what is occurring inside Iraq is an indigenous, reaction to an illegitimate occupation of a sovereign nation? Why do we suddenly have to create an enemy over the border who is responsible for the fact that the Iraqi people do not want us in their country and are willing to fight us to the death to get us out of their country?
We're talking with Scott Ritter here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let's take some calls. Billy in Capitola, thanks for checking in. You're on the air.
Peter B.
Yes, sir.
You get the best Scots. You really do. First of all, Scott's right about Iran not being close to having any nuclear weapons. I've got a detector buried in the sand out there. Can't miss, never fails us. It's called Israel. They'll let us know when we need to get serious. Right,
well,
Scott?
Let's raise this, because AIPAC and the government of Israel have a great deal of influence over this administration and the Democratic Congress. And in particular, Scott, comment on the way that the Democrats withdrew a clause in the supplemental that ultimately they caved in and passed before Memorial Day that explicitly said that the president had to get explicit approval from Congress for any military action against Iran.
Well, it's true. I mean, we had Jim Webb, a fantastic Marine Corps veteran from Vietnam, war hero, currently a senator from the state of Virginia, and others saying, look, all we want to do is ensure that if, before the president takes action against Iran, that he consults Congress, and that Congress approves this. This is sort of what the Constitution says must occur. This was shot down by other Democrats who said that to put these kind of restraints in place would be damaging not to the national security interest of America, but to the national security interest of the state of Israel. So we have a clear-cut situation where the Congress of the United States, and I'll be more specific, the Democrats in the Congress of the United States have put Israeli concerns above the Constitution of the United States of America.
And that brings the other point that I wanted to bring up to respond to what you said before. You know, you're wrong when you say, oh, you know, the Constitution's in trouble and we're not speaking up. We are speaking up, but nobody's hearing us. The people who are not following through are these Democrats we were talking about a second ago, because there's our only tool. We have what? We have the news media, and we have the opposition party, and neither one is doing its job. But we're here speaking up. Believe me, Scott, it's not as if the politically astute don't know that the Constitution's been trampled on. And one more thing before I go. There is already a bomb that's in an unstable Islamic Republic, Pakistan. That scares the hell out of me.
All right, Scott,
well,
your reaction?
I mean, I'll back up both. Look, I'm not here to criticize what you call the politically astute, yourself included. I know that there are Americans out there who are aware of what's going on, who are familiar with the Constitution, understand the principles that are set forth by the Constitution. But when I go to high schools, and this isn't something limited to my area here in New York, I travel to high schools across the country and I speak to the auditorium is full of high school students. And when I ask the students, in particular the graduating classes, how many have read the Constitution, fewer than 10% raise their hands. And then when I ask those 10% who among you are ready to take a test right now where 80% is a passing grade on the Constitution, the hands all go down. The bottom line is the majority of Americans are ignorant about the Constitution, therefore are ignorant about that which defines America, and are ignorant about that which they are required as citizens to defend. How can you speak out against warrantless wiretapping as a violation of the Fourth Amendment, against the illegal search and seizures, when you're not familiar with the Fourth Amendment? So, you know, that's my problem. Not with people like yourself who are, of course, cognizant and aware and articulate, but the majority of Americans who aren't, who need to get a grip, who need to understand that there's something worth fighting for here in America. It's called freedom defined by the Constitution, and they have a requirement as citizens to become familiar with that document so that they can defend that document.
And Scott, there were far too many Americans who were apoplectic about irregularities in the voting for American Idol than they were about the irregularities in voting in 2000 and 2004.
Look, the media has become about entertainment. It's not about, the major news networks today don't produce informative news. I've traveled around the world. I've seen what news organizations are capable of doing. My family just had the privilege of going to Europe and having a vacation in Europe. And on day one, we turn on the television, and right off the bat, we get stories about the Republic of Georgia. We get stories about, France and Spain,
mm-hmm.
and that, there's a world out there. There's 7 billion people who aren't Americans who populate this earth, and somehow we in the United States have become so wrapped around the notion of 300 million people dictating the terms of coexistence with the rest of the world that we forget that not only are we a distinct minority in the world today, but there are people out there who don't call themselves Americans, who live normal lives and want to have a future, and why is it we feel that we have a right to impose ourselves on them in an aggressive, sometimes violent manner? And why are we upset when They react to our aggression in a similarly aggressive fashion. It's stunning how ignorant, you know, the world's most technologically advanced nation is about the world we live in.
Let's go to Joe in Pacific Grove. Hi, Joe. You're on with Scott Ritter.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Just fine.
Yeah, I think you guys must have touched on a key word when Billy was on the phone, because I think it was something about shot down, because they had an unmarked helicopter did a couple of loops over me here. I'm serious. I don't have my bulletproof vest handy. Anyway, I had a two-pronged question for Mr. Ritter, and I wish he'd be on the media more, because the last time I heard tell of him was right after his inspections came up empty-handed. Part one of my question, I'll take my answer off the air. Part one of my question is, did he, when he came up empty-handed on the thing, which we already knew, he got lambasted on some of the right-wing, like Rush, Limburger and stuff, started calling him a traitor, even though he's a Republican and respected person. All of a sudden, they said that he didn't do his job right. Now, how could a sick guy single-handedly find anything? I doubt if he was single-handed. I wonder if he had any help on the effort. And the second part of my question is, just before the last election, they had the Hans Blix or whatever from the United Nations. He said there was 480 tons, a ton is 2,000 pounds, of plastic that they had secured at an airport facility and let the incoming troops know where it is. And they came up with, apparently that got into the hands of the insurgents to make those very improvised explosives, which are taking our troops off the map daily.
All right, Joe, you got your question out there. Scott, hold on. I've got to take a break because Joe took a while there to get his question out, and we'll get you a chance to give him some answers right after the break. Scott Ritter is with us. His newest book, Waging Peace, The Art of War for the Anti-War Movement. Also, read his column at truthdig.com, all about Dick Cheney, why Cheney really is that bad. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM radio.
Hi, KRXA. I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Hey, everybody, let's take a look at traffic and give you the very latest. Let's update you folks with a problem being reported. It is in Monterey, Highway 68 at York. Two vehicles and a dump truck on the right-hand shoulder involved in this crash. Taking a look at another problem, it's in Hollister, eastbound 152 at 156, a big rig and another vehicle on the shoulder there. It's been cleared, but eastbound 152 is still slowed from just about Bloomfield to 156. Soledad, northbound 101 at Soledad State Prison, place you don't want to go. on a, you know what I'm trying to say. We have a bucket in the left lane, at least not personally. Anyways, Santa Cruz, southbound 17 at Highway 1, we have an accident there. CHP looking for two vehicles. Also Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at 17. We have a large dog in the right lane, and checking northbound and southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel, pretty moderate to traffic being reported out of there.
We're in the home stretch here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Scott Ritter, Marine Intelligence Officer, served with the United Nations Weapons Inspectors, and his newest book, Waging Peace, The Art of War for the Anti-War Movement. He will be speaking in New York City on the 28th, Tuesday, at the McNally-Robinson Bookstore, 7 p.m. That's at 52 Prince Street. And one more time, I reference a great column he wrote that you can read on the homepage of truthdig.com. Scott, to Joe's questions, one about the way you were vilified by Rush Limbaugh and others. Your patriotism was questioned. What do you want to say about that?
Well, first of all, I think one of his the subset of his question was certainly I wasn't operating alone, meaning that you know I simply didn't step out and say something that wasn't backed by a systematic approach. And he's 100% correct. I will say this. You know, inspections, like anything, is information-driven. And I was the head of an intelligence cell within the United Nations, and I had a unique job where I had more access to the totality of information about the world's understanding of Iraqi WMD than the average inspector did. And so I was more empowered to speak out in a decisive, factually based manner than other inspectors might have, which is why sometimes it might have seemed that I was standing alone. But again, we come down to the crux of the matter. Why do Americans, and I don't mean, you know, some of your listeners, but, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, they all have these followings in a certain, you know, strata of American society that seem to be tuned in only for rhetorically based ideology as opposed to the facts. Since when did facts stop mattering? You know, I never tried to sell myself as a Republican, a former Marine, et cetera. These are realities of my background, but I sold myself as an individual who was in possession of facts, who was defending the truth. And who attacked me? Those who found the truth inconvenient. People like Rush Limbaugh, like Sean Hannity, like Ann Coulter, and others who could not deal with facts. And as a result, instead of dealing with the message, chose to attack the messenger. One of the oldest tricks in the political book.
Right.
And yet so many Americans fell for it.
It's Scott, funny. I'm sorry to interrupt. Our time is tight. What about Hans Blix and the plastique that Joe referred to?
Well, again, he's absolutely correct. But again, this is something that predated Hans Blix. We, the United Nations inspectors in the 1990s, identified what's called HMX and RDX, two kinds of high explosives used in the nuclear program, as items that needed to be controlled. We placed them under seal. We weighed them. We knew where they were. This data was shared with the United States government. And, you know, we went to war based upon the president's claim and the vice president's claim that Iran or Iraq was on the verge of a nuclear program. Remember,
right.
Condoleezza Rice, we don't want the smoking gun to come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Yep.
A key element, of course, was this HMX and RDX. And yet, to go to war about these weapons and then to leave this material in an area that we knew where it was and not to secure it so that it can be stolen by insurgents to make high-quality explosives that are killing Americans, is not only inexcusable, but underscores the reality that this administration was never concerned about Iraq's WMD programs because they knew from the very start that it was a fraud, that they were perpetuating a fraud. They made no effort to actually follow through on identifying these weapons and bringing them under control.
Chris and Salinas, go ahead. You're on the air with Scott Ritter.
Yes, Scott, thanks for everything you've done. Reading Iraqi Confidential, at the end of the book, you write about how Madeleine Albright basically derailed or, you know, sabotaged your efforts in Iraq. And what you just said about the Bush administration not wanting to identify these problems. What about the Clinton administration?
Look, I've said it. I've gone on record. I went to Hofstra a couple years ago when they were, doing the wrap-up of the Clinton administration. Everybody came in to sing the praise of the Clinton administration. I was asked to chair the Iraq committee. And I said, look, if you want, you can call the current war George Bush's war because he was the commander-in-chief and ordered the troops in. But the bottom line is the foundation for this war was built by Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton did this, carried out the same policies, a policy of regime change. Using the CIA to assassinate Saddam Hussein was first put in place by Bill Clinton. He, of course, was responsible for the decade of economic sanctions that killed over 2 million Iraqi civilians. Bill Clinton used the UN inspections to spy on Saddam, to set up military strikes. He's as guilty of the same thing that we are accusing George W. Bush. He just never took it to the same level that George W. Bush. The problem in Iraq today, and this is a point I make all the time, this is not a Republican problem. This is an American problem. This is a problem where we, the people, have yet to come to grips with the fact that we elect into office representatives who don't do a good job of representing us abroad, who create a persona of America that does not interface in a friendly manner with the rest of the world. Iraq is a manifestation of this, both in terms of the Clinton administration's policies and the ongoing Bush administration's policies.
Chris, thanks for a great question.
All right, thank you.
Scott Ritter, thank you for your work. And in 20 seconds, what should we pressure the Democrats to do to get us out of Iraq?
Defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Ask, why do we have soldiers who swore an oath to defend the Constitution fighting and dying in Iraq today? Is this a cause worthy of their sacrifice? And the answer, of course, is no. Therefore, the only solution is to get the soldiers home.
Thank you, Scott Ritter. I really appreciate your work, and we'll always regard you as a great American. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Happy trails to you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll do it again tomorrow, and I hope you'll tune in. Visit our website at peterbcollins.com. That's where you can access podcasts and archive shows, a picture of him, and that kind of thing. Thanks for listening.
Who cares about the clouds if we're together?
Salt means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies lying before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
And it's flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foti. Senator Larry Craig's long congressional career could be over in the morning. The Associated Press, quoting Republican officials in Idaho, as saying the three-term senator will announce he'll leave the Senate effective the 30th of September. Jonathan Martin is with Politico.com.
He is torn, probably, between supporters and his own family and his close political circles and those in his party in Washington, D.C., who want to, turn the page to stop this bleeding. And the only thing that can sort of remove the focus is for him to step down.
This just days afterward that Craig pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge after his arrest in a Minneapolis airport men's room. Another Republican senator has also made his future plans clear, CBS's John Harchie reports.
Virginia Republican John Warner, first elected in 1978, says he will not seek a sixth term next year.
I will then be, as I am now, the second longest serving United States senator
in the history of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
80-year-old Warner, long influential on the Armed Services Committee, has spent 45 years in public service.
I urge all to try and find, at some point in their lifetime, to serve the needs of others.
Keeping his seat in the party could be a challenge for Republicans. They lost the other Virginia Senate seat last year to Democrat Jim Webb. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
And there is also a change coming in just 2 weeks at the briefing room microphone at the White House. Tony Snow is stepping down as press secretary after about a year and a half. Snow says he wants to make more money in the private sector to take care of his family. He's been waging a public battle against cancer. But he insists the reason for his departure is financial. As for his replacement,
35-year-old Dana Perino is no stranger to the White House podium pressure cooker. She took over most of the duties as the president's top media aide when Press Secretary Tony Snow first underwent treatment for recurrence of colon cancer last spring. Other White House aides have said Perino built a strong working relationship with the president. Perino will become the second woman presidential press secretary. Dee Dee Meyer served as Bill Clinton's chief spokesperson.
That is CBS News White House correspondent Peter Mayer. Still more fallout from the Duke University lacrosse case. The prosecutor who brought the rape charges against three players will himself be going to jail for one day. Superior Court Judge Osmond Smith held ex-Durham County District Attorney Mike Nifong in contempt of court for lying to the court about evidence in the rape case, which not only collapsed but cost Nifong his job and his law license.
Based upon the court's finding that the defendant is guilty of criminal contempt in this case, it is the judgment of the court that the defendant serve a term of imprisonment of one day in the Durham County Jail.
Nifong will serve that one day in jail on September 7th. President Bush and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke both promised to ease the mortgage credit crunch, and that came as good news on Wall Street, where the Dow Jones Industrials were up 119 points, NASDAQ up 31, Standard & Poor's 500, 16 and a third. This is CBS News.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000. Vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Giving your house a whole new look will put a smile on your face. So will saving money on it during the Labor Day sale at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. From August 30th to September 3rd, save $8 a gallon on Duration coatings, 30% on our exceptional paints and stains, and 25% on select wall coverings, too. Hurry, sale ends Monday, September 3rd, for painting and decorating. For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
Hundreds of people packed a California church where U.S. Army Corporal Nathan Hubbard was honored at a funeral service.
An entire community came together to say farewell to a soldier, Nathan Hubbard, killed in Iraq last week.
Today we give thanks to God for Nathan's life.
This farewell was different, however, for the Hubbard family. Sadly, it was something they had experienced before, less than 3 years ago, when another son, Jared, was also killed in Iraq.
We also know that Nathan is experiencing a great reunion with Jared.
A third Hubbard son, Jason, has also been serving in Iraq. The military says he will no longer take part in combat. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Clovis, California.
With all the international uproar about the safety of products made in China, China has just made a new system to handle nationwide product recalls. Aimed at stuff sold both at home and abroad, it requires manufacturers to notify vendors and customers. I'm Tom Foti, CBS News.
It's your walls and your ideas, your kitchen and your creativity, your garage and your vision. It's your home, from the small jobs that renew to more ambitious ideas that transform. At Ace Hardware, we're here to help you.
Come to your neighborhood Ace and start your project now for paint, plumbing, home organization, serious hardware, and great gadgets, plus a team of Ace folks to help you get just what you need to make your home beautiful.
Ace is your place, with everything for your home, plus expert advice and solutions that work for you. Ace, the helpful place.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. As usual, we've got a lot to talk about today. Up first on our program, we'll spend the hour with John Perkins. You remember his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman? Well, he's got a new book out which tells more. Coming up next hour, Bruce Fein, a Republican. Yeah, that's a rare event on this program. Bruce Fein served in the Reagan administration as a deputy attorney general. And he's been very critical of the Bush administration about the presidential signing statements. He supports impeachment for Dick Cheney and has recently supported censure for George W. Bush. We'll get his views on the constitutional showdown that's shaping up in Washington. That's coming up next hour. Also on today's program, we're going to take a look at secular America. I don't believe it's a Christian nation. Laurie Lipman Brown from the Secular Coalition for America will join us. And Nika Lally, a writer who's penned a book called Nothing, Something to Believe In, will return to our program. We'll have a lively conversation about belief and non-belief. And lots of room for your phone calls along the way. You're always welcome to join this conversation. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me. That email address is peter@peterbcollins.com. Yes, they do it for the love of money. John Perkins returns to our program. The last time I talked with him, gave us stories to tell for a long, long time, made a deep impression on our listeners. He, of course, authored Confessions of an Economic Hitman. That's about 5 years ago, I think. And the new book is called The Secret History of the American Empire. The subtitle violates our length requirements, but we'll read it anyway. Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. John Perkins, welcome to our show today.
Thanks, Peter. Great to be with you.
Nice to talk with you again. How's it going?
It's going wonderfully. I've been on a book tour for the last month or so, and Secret History is doing very well. It's hit the New York Times list twice.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must feel pretty good.
Well, it lets me know, that I think people really want to get behind the facts. They really want to understand what's going on in the world, and also Secret History spells out some solutions, things we can all do to make it a better world. And I think people really into that, and I'm glad for that reason.
And woven through the stories you tell, and you have an interesting writing style. Your chapters are often very short and concise, and tell a fairly discreet story or episode. But woven through there are tons of interactions with people who came to your book signings or other events behind the earlier book, and who spilled their guts to you and told you stories that they really wanted to unburden on someone, but they live in this dark, murky, secretive world where there's nobody they can share it with.
Yes, it's been most interesting, Peter. Since Confessions came out, which was in late 2004, a lot of people have stepped out of the shadows, so to speak, other economic hitmen, jackals, assassins, people like that, and told me their stories and asked me to relate their stories to a larger public. It seems as though there's a lot of people who want to confess, and some of them are not at liberty to give their true names because they're still in the business, which in a way makes it a lot more exciting to think that these people are still doing this stuff, and at the same time, they want to spill the beans and let us all know what's going on in the world.
Yeah. John, I'm getting a little weak signal out of your phone, so if you can blast into it a little bit, that would help us. Let's start off with some key definitions here for people who didn't read the new book and are hearing about John Perkins for the first time. What is an EHM, an economic hitman?
Well, I think, Peter, is this better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think it's fair to say that we economic hitmen have managed to create the world's first truly global empire during the last few decades. And we've done this primarily without the military, through economics. Therefore, it's been done largely in secret. Most people living in the United States have no idea that they're benefiting from the fruits of this worldwide empire. We operate in many different ways, but perhaps the most common is to identify a third world country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil.
Mm-hmm.
And then we arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sisters. But the money doesn't actually go to the country. Instead, it goes to our own corporations that build big infrastructure projects in that country, power plants, industrial parks, ports, that sort of thing, things that benefit a few very rich people in the country, as well as our corporations, but don't a country from the World Bank or one of its sisters. But the money doesn't actually go to the country. Instead, it goes to our own corporations that build big infrastructure projects in that country, power plants, industrial parks, ports, that sort of thing, things that benefit a few very rich people in the country, as well as our corporations, but don't benefit most of the people who are too poor to use much electricity, and don't have the skills to get jobs in industrial parks, etc. And so at some point, we economic hitmen go back to the country and say, listen, you know, you've got a huge loan out. You can't repay your debt. So give us a pound of flesh. Sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies, or vote with us on the next critical United Nations vote, or send troops in support of ours to someplace in the world like Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that how we got the coalition of the billing?
Excuse me?
Is that how we got the coalition of the billing that joined us for the phony coalition in Iraq?
Well, yeah.
Let me read a couple of paragraphs here from the prologue of the new book. The power base of the corporatocracy is its corporations. They define our world. When we look at a globe, we see the outlines of slightly less than 200 countries. Many of the boundaries were established by colonial powers, and most of these countries have minimal impact on their neighbors. From a geopolitical viewpoint, this model is archaic. The reality of our modern world might better be represented by huge clouds that encircle the planet, each symbolizing a multinational corporation. These powerful entities impact every single country. Their tentacles reach into the deepest rainforests and to the most remote deserts. The corporatocracy makes a show of promoting democracy and transparency among the nations of the world, yet its corporations are imperialistic dictatorships, where a few, a very few, make all the decisions and reap most of the profits. In our electoral process, the very heart of our democracy, most of us get to vote only for candidates whose campaign chests are full. Therefore, we must select from among those who are beholden to the corporations and the men who own them. Contrary to our ideals, this empire is built on foundations of greed, secrecy, and excessive materialism. I think that really nails it. One other term I'd like you to define before we dig into some of the great stories in the book, John Perkins, is jackal. What's a jackal?
Well, on the rare instances when we economic hitmen fail to bring a country around, essentially by corrupting its leaders, then the jackals are sent in. And these are men and sometimes women who overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. So I failed with Omar Torrijos in Panama and also with Jaime Roldós in Ecuador. I was not able to corrupt either of those men and bring them around and have them accept the deals that we want to put together. And so both of them were assassinated by CIA-sponsored jackals. Usually these people work for private corporations these days, not directly for the government, but they're brought in by the CIA, by our intelligence community.
And are there any companies that you can name that provide the jackals? Because we're seeing a lot of this contracting of mercenaries in Iraq right now. We spent a lot of time recently, for example, talking about DynCorp and Blackwater and KBR.
Yeah, exactly. You know, those are both companies. Those are all three of those companies hire what you might call a jackal henchman. That's what I would call them. They tend to hire large armies. We've got a lot of these people in Iraq today. I recently saw an estimate of something around 45,000 to 50,000. But they're kind of like the bouncers for the most part. You know, these are not highly skilled. They're mercenaries. They are mercenaries. But then the smaller companies, usually they're offshore companies who work out of someplace in the British Empire or someplace else, much smaller, that hire very elite mercenaries. These are the real assassins. These guys have been well-trained. Some of them came out of the CIA, et cetera. And they are a more elite group and a smaller group. But all of them do fall under the classification of mercenary.
All right, we've got our terminology. We're going to take a break and return with John Perkins. The new book is called The Secret History of the American Empire, Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. We'll give you some great stories, and you're welcome to call with a comment or a question this hour. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Listen to you. Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hey, everybody, let's get you to your destination safely on this Labor Day kickoff and a lot of activity going on here in the Bay Area and in Monterey, Salinas. Hey, let's also mention the Bay Bridge, in case you haven't heard about it. It's going to be closing tonight from 8 o'clock until 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning. So remember, you cannot access the Bay Bridge. You need to take alternatives to traveling to the Bay Area. Let's start off with the Romas, northbound 101 after San Juan. We have a truck towing a trailer stalled in the right lane. We also want to look at Prunedale, northbound 101, or southbound 101 before Echo Valley. We have a disabled vehicle there. It's also in the left lane as well. Excuse me. And let's take a look at a problem being working right now. It is in Hollister. Slow traffic being reported eastbound 152 out of Gilroy to 156 due to a much earlier crash. And we're going to advise you about that. That's traffic on KRXA.
The Peter B. Collins Show. Yes, from the point of view of the corporatocracy, the globalization thing is going very well, and the world is getting smaller and smaller, just as the Disney singers have been telling us for years. John Perkins is with us. He's got a new book called The Secret History of the American Empire, and it's a sequel or a follow-up to his book Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And, John, let's go straight to Indonesia. Because you tell some fascinating stories there. Let me ask you to retell, it's Chapter 9, Fruits of Corruption, the meeting that you had where somebody came and asked you for tips on how to pay a $150 million bribe to the family of President Suharto. This was back about 12 years ago, back in 1995. And maybe you can use this as a way of illustrating how the corporatocracy works and how economic hitmen operate.
I'd be glad to, Peter. I was working at the time for Stone & Webster, a big engineering firm in Boston, as a consultant to them. Basically, it was kind of a bribe not to write the book. They'd given me this very cushy job where I didn't have to do much and paid me a lot of money for that. But one of the few times they did ask me to do that was when a high official from that company came to me and said, "We have a huge contract we want to win in Indonesia. And we need to bribe a family member of Suharto in order to get it, about $150 million. He says, "You've done this kind of work a lot. What do you suggest?" And I told him a couple of ways that I knew you could bribe these people legally. And this goes on all the time, Peter. I'm sad to say, but it happens all the time. And those ways are, for example, you offer to hire a company that's owned by a friend or a brother or a relative of the person you're trying to bribe, in this case Suharto. Let's say his brother owns a construction company. You offer to subcontract to his company. And basically, let's say you subcontract for a job you know is worth $1 million, but you offer to pay $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing really illegal about that. If you ever get found out that you've paid $2 million for $1 million job, and you know that the other million or a large share of it's going to the president, but there's nothing in writing. If you get caught, you simply say, "Oh, well, I thought it was worth $2 million. It was a bad business deal."
Right.
And you might even end up firing an underling who actually signed the deal. But there's nothing illegal about it. You can also, and we did this a great deal in this business, is that you bring the children of high officials to the United States. You make sure that they get scholarships, or you give them scholarships to some of our universities. You help them get into the universities. You pay all their expenses. You hire them for part-time jobs and pay them very well.
And don't forget the geishas.
Yeah, the geishas, too, which I talk about in the story of, you know, providing women for these people. And you can do all of that very, very legally.
And the geishas, not to be salacious here, but that helps to compromise these individuals and make it easier to work them over in the future.
I tell a number of stories in the book about how sex is used to get information, to compromise people. Very often, economic hit men or economic hit women will go in and seduce a diplomat or the wife of a diplomat and ask for information by saying, "You know, I have to get this information in order to get a promotion. Can't you just give me a little bit of inside information?" And if she doesn't do it, if it's the woman I'm working with, for example, then the next thing I say, "You know, well, I'm going to lose my job, you know, if I don't get this information. Please help me get it."
Mm-hmm.
And if she still won't do it, then it's blackmail. Then you say, "Look, you know, you've been having an affair with me. I'm going public with it."
Mm-hmm.
Then you usually get the information.
And now, John, talk a little bit about the Indonesian government's response to the tsunami of Christmas 2005 and how they used it to consolidate their power over the islands, I guess, of Aceh and East Timor.
Yeah, and Peter, before I do, just to finish that
sure.
story about Stone & Webster, you know, basically the Stone & Webster official said, "That's not good enough. He's got to get the money right away." And I said, "I don't know any way to do that legally." And then basically I got off the case. And many years later, the Boston Globe just a couple of years ago came out with an article that is why Stone & Webster ultimately went bankrupt, is because they finally did do the payoff of $150 million or $147 million and got caught in the process.
Wow.
So it came back to hound them.
Yeah.
Now, in regard to the tsunami, you know, it's another sad comment that when there's a catastrophe in the world like the tsunami, we send in immediately a lot of true foreign aid, tents, food, bottled water, stuff like this to immediately help relieve the suffering, and that's good. But then suddenly there's an announcement that so many billions of dollars have been provided to help rebuild the economy of these countries. And what occurs then is that most of that money goes to big corporations, corporations.
All right, we'll pick up there. We got to take a break, John Perkins, and we'll be right back and let you tell the rest of that story. The new book is The Secret History of the American Empire. John Perkins with us this full hour, so call us with your questions and comments. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner.